Welcome to the Nuggets Inc. podcast, the Denver Post podcast about all things Denver Nuggets. I'm your host, Matt Schubert, joined as always by Mike Singer to talk about the latest Nuggets news. Jamal Murray, testy after another Nuggets loss. Facu Campazzo, getting floor burns and sometimes hitting an open jumper. Nikola Jokic, still good. And the trade deadline. What can the Nuggets do? What should the Nuggets do? What will they do? All that and more coming up next. And here we are back again with Michael Singer to talk about the Nuggets after a brutal road trip. Mike, things didn't go great on the road for the Nuggets. It looked like everything was good the last time we talked. They were on an upward trajectory, winning games. And now we're coming off a loss to the Hawks, the Atlanta Hawks, who aren't exactly world beaters this season. I know they spent a lot of money, but they've been struggling. And then you and Jamal had a little back and forth to go with it.
Yes.
So, how are you? And how has the last week been for you?
I'm good. I got out of the Jamal scrape with no bruises, no cuts. Pretty happy about that. It's kind of funny when Jamal wants to go gloves off, and I'm more than willing to go gloves off if that's the way that Jamal wants to approach this. I appreciated it in the fact that he said, "I'll answer after you answer." And I was like, "All right, well, I'll give you my state of the team from my perspective, but just keep in mind, your opinion is more important than what I write." Even though what I write is minorly significant, but got out of that scrap, thankfully. And again, like it's Jamal and I have a great relationship. It's just, it is fun sometimes going back and forth and making these Zooms a little bit more lively, because they can be pretty rote. They can be kind of boring and just another loss. Okay. But Jamal wanted to spice it up. I was willing to go there. Cool.
Can I give you my thought on it?
Please.
As the non-participating spectator in this no holds barred fisticuffs, I felt that it was revealing in the sense that as much as Jamal kept saying he wasn't worried, he certainly looked like he was frustrated. That he's frustrated that they're not winning these games, and that they are, even if they're above 500, they're not quite but getting to the ceiling that he has for them. Look, what do you think about that?
Look, if I could audit what I was going to say, not that I had any time to reconsider or even knew Jamal wanted to banter. I would have told him bluntly, the reason that I have concerns about the team are these like peaks and valleys that you generally do not see from real title contenders, from teams that have designs on advancing deep into the playoffs. Those type of teams don't allow 46 points to the Washington Wizards and a no contest layup to end the quarter from Alex Len, which also, by the way, happened with LeBron James when they faced the Lakers about a week ago. And then last night, they allowed 37 points to the Atlanta Hawks in the second quarter. Defense completely falls off the rails. And to me, that is like I can understand losses. I can understand bad losses. But when you have a pattern of not meeting the moment, when you have a pattern of, I don't know if it's playing down to opponents, but not being up all the time. Like if you are ostensibly the hunted, given that you went to the Western Conference Finals, why is your guard not up? Why are you not prepared to take other teams' best shots? To me, maybe in a cleaner soundbite, I wish I would have expressed that sentiment to Jamal. But like, look, the fact of the matter is that their defense has let them down again and again. Their turnovers have let them down, careless turnovers at that. And that was, those two components were really at the heart of their 1-3 road trip. with their only win coming against Cleveland, when you could very easily make the case that they probably anticipated going 3-1 with games against Boston, Washington, Cleveland, and Atlanta. Like that is kind of the doldrums of the Eastern Conference.
Well, I think the other part of it is that Jamal probably had his best 4-game stretch of the season, and they still went 1-3. You know, he had a 50-point game in there where they did win. He had a fantastic game against Washington. He hits a three-pointer from almost half court, it felt like, to tie that, and it ended up not mattering. I think that probably has to feed into the fact that he was a little chippy.
I mean, like, he's done this before. He kind of engages in these Zoom banters, and, like, you know, none of them have really come off terribly bad yet, but, like, there's the possibility that it could go sideways. And so I just don't know how quote unquote chippy it was, because I think it's more in his nature to engage and to challenge and to go back and forth. And like I said, I'm more than willing to do that. But that's not going to cover up the fact that they are losing games that they should be winning. And it's not going to cover up the fact that effort has been, waning in some of these games as well. I mean, we talked to Monte Morris after the game, and he said, yeah, there are effort plays, you know, and communication and KYP, know your personnel. Like, they let Tony Snell go off in the first half yesterday. Tony Snell. Then, as if maybe you don't know Tony Snell, maybe he's not a top three on the scouting report, then you let Trae Young go off. From the logo Young, 14 points in the third quarter alone as part of his 35-point, 15-assist night. Like, they didn't even put up a resistance against Trae Young. So to me, those are the concerning parts. Like, when you know a guy is going to get hot or has the capability of getting hot, and you're not physical with him, and you don't have high pickup points because you know we can shoot from 35 feet, and you don't send doubles, and you don't trap, like, all of those things, they just look like they had no real defensive game plan yesterday against the Hawks, even though you have a pretty fair idea what they're going to do.
So another weird thing happened last night. I'm not sure if you noticed this or not, but Michael Porter Jr. disappeared in the second half. Where the heck was he?
Well, it's not that he was on the court disappearing.
It's that
he was glued to the bench. He played 7 minutes in the third quarter and then didn't play again the rest of the game. I went back and watched the game, and completely honest, my completely honest opinion, I don't think there were many glaring defensive mistakes in the third quarter that evidently preempted his benching. I really don't. And in the first half, he was good. We talked off air. He did get into foul trouble. He got 3 fouls in the first half relatively quickly. He also had 10 points. I think he was 4-for-4 from the field. He had 2 big blocks on Trae Young. I don't know if you remember, Trae Young blew past Facu Campazzo. Again, no resistance. And Michael Porter Jr. comes over from the weak side, blocks it. Like, aren't those the effort, defensive awareness plays that everybody has been calling for? Like, he did it. And then he did it again on a Trae Young fast break where he didn't trip over him. He didn't get a foul like he did earlier in the game, but he timed it and he blocked Trae Young's shot off the backboard. So there's so many layers to this. Like, I see defensive growth from Michael Porter Jr. I really do. Offensively, we know what he's capable of. So he ends up playing 19 minutes in total last night. And in the third quarter, Michael Malone subs out 4 guys, leaves in Nikola Jokic. He ends up bringing in Bol Bol in the third quarter. This is Bol Bol, who hasn't played in weeks, meaningful minutes in weeks. He plays Bol Bol over Porter. Okay, all right. You know, maybe Porter's tired. Maybe they need to switch the rhythm up. Maybe they need new energy and new blood. And that second unit did cut into the lead. They did well. They brought some urgency to the game. However, in the fourth quarter, it's about a 12-point game, and there's about 6.5, 7 minutes left. And Michael Malone goes to Zeke Nnaji, a rookie who was getting his first NBA start ever, instead of Porter. Now, we know Michael Porter can play the 4 because he played the 4 against Cleveland, and he played it well. So Malone opted for a rookie against a really tough front court that could jump out of the gym in John Collins and Clint Capella instead of Michael Porter when they needed scoring. So to me, those are curious decisions. And I don't know. I'm not going to assume. I'm not in the locker room. Again, we're still over Zoom. I'm not in a place where I can have these direct conversations with guys and be in the locker room. But to me, Michael Porter was not the biggest defensive liability in yesterday's loss to the Atlanta Hawks. That was the guards. Will Barton and Jamal Murray could not keep guards in front of them in terms of Trae Young or Kevin Huerter. The Hawks outscored the Nuggets 56-40 in terms of points in the paint. And those are layups. Those are just blow-bys. Those are not having ball containment. And it screws up the whole defense. So I realized that I was long-winded, and I know that you didn't know where I was going with that, but I had to get it off my chest. And I've also had about 2.5 of cups of coffee thus far this morning.
Well, that's good. We're here on a Monday morning, FYI, listeners. And I just want to read off to you part of a five-man lineup we saw in the fourth quarter while Michael Porter Jr. wasn't playing. Faku, RJ Hampton, Monte Morris, Jamal Murray, Isaiah Hartenstein.
All right. Let me comment. That lineup, I know it's a wonky lineup and it's due to injuries. That lineup actually did pretty well.
Yeah, no, they made a run. They got
all right. Well, that's an important qualifier when you're casting out these like five-man oddball lineups.
I just thought it was a strange lineup. That is not something I foresaw happening this season. Was
all right. So here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. After the game, Malone was asked about Monte Morris, who played really, really well. And Malone goes, "It's the worst feeling as a coach to be in, quote, search mode and finding lineups, tinkering with lineups, finding guys who are going to provide a spark." So that's where the Nuggets are right now. We haven't even talked about this. We haven't even talked about Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, Jermichael Green, PJ Dozier, all out. Like, and outside of Jermichael Green, they all seem like pretty significant in terms of time frames. We don't have exact dates on returns, but like the other three guys, Harris, Millsap, and Dozier, their returns do not seem imminent. So they're missing the four out of their top eight or nine rotation guys. So obviously there is a trickle down effect. How does that impact? Well, that impacts that Bol Bol plays his first minutes in weeks. That gives Zeke Nnaji his first start. RJ Hampton is thrown into the fire against Trae Young pick and rolls, which are devastating to anybody, let alone a rookie. And so there is that's how we end up with those kind of lineups. Like,
can I just interject? I have to say I've liked what I've seen from RJ Hampton. I think there's something there.
I can tell you the Nuggets are extremely excited about RJ Hampton. They think he has a ton of potential. Still, I believe only 19, switchable defender, freaky athlete. Still
and
doesn't
he rebounds
really know
like crazy for a
yeah,
guard.
Yeah. Still doesn't really know how to control his body when he's going 200 miles an hour down the lane. But you know, I'm here for that. He's a fun guy to watch. A really good draft pick from Tim Connelly, traded back in the first round, got him at 24, another high upside guy that fell that they pounced on. Hampton, definitely encouraging, but and Nnaji played well outside. I didn't even mention this. In the last 6 minutes when the Nuggets are down by 12, Nnaji did not play well. He had a lot of defensive lapses. He would lose guys on the back end.
He gave up an alley-oop dunk that was just
– Yeah, he got disconnected. And so and that's another thing. If you listen to Jamal Murray's, you know, I'm going to call it a rant, he talks about the injuries and he talks about the guys who are rotating in and he talks about the need for communication. There was a three-pointer on Trae Young where Jamal thought that they were switching and Zeke did not think they were switching. So Zeke and Jamal end up leaving Trae Young wide open, which, you know, my basketball career did not advance very far, but I would have stuck to Trae Young's hip, given what I know about basketball.
That's a good point. It's a good point. So we get Bubble Jamal back and still get a 1-3 week out of the Nuggets. Michael Porter Jr., I'd say he's been up and down for the last week or two.
Can I interject one thing?
Yep.
I am wary of referring to Jamal as Bubble Jamal.
And tell me why. Explanation demand.
The reason why I'm a little bit hesitant to do that is because I don't know that he came into this season pressure-free. I think last year's bubble added a hell of a lot of expectations, a lot of responsibility, and a belief that he was a shoo-in. He was going to ascend to an all-star this year. I think that that's what last year's postseason did to the perception of Jamal Murray, and I think he feels the weight of that. And so,
well, you know, my response to that is, well, too bad, Jamal. You're getting a max contract. Welcome to the world of max contractville. A lot is expected.
Can I get clearance to that town? Max contract.
I would love to live in that town.
I'm here for that town. So I'm just not sure that he, you know, is leaning into those to that pressure and leaning into who he was, because he was otherworldly in the bubble. And to think that we were even going to get 80 or 90% of that would be a significant leap. I don't even want to put a percentage on what component of Bubble Jamal has translated to regular season Jamal. But he clearly hasn't been the same as he was, which again was like Hall of Fame level. And I also, one other component to that, like he said after the Cleveland game when he hung 50, that one of the reasons why he exploded was because he fed off the crowd. And Jamal is an emotional player, and most of the places that they've been playing do not have crowds.
I'm going to tell you why that doesn't hold up. There was no crowd in the bubble, and he played his butt off in the bubble.
There was a crowd. There were some people there. There were fans. There were family members there. Maybe yes. Not. Dozens. You know. I also think that was still a novelty, and people were excited to be playing on like an elevated stage in a weird magical kingdom. And it was not in Cavernous Arena. I can also say that there weren't
fair enough.
20,
yeah.
There weren't 20,000 empty seats where Jamal yells and after he hits a three or dunks home a 50-point jam and to give him 50 points, and those echoes just fiddle out and they don't go anywhere. So I do wonder whether the lack of fans has played a role in kind of his uneven season. But again, that'd be giving him an excuse. You're right. Max Contractville, let's see it, Jamal. Let's see his consistency week in, week out.
I'll tell you what I don't want to see. I don't want to see 8 points. I don't want to see an 8-point night out of Jamal Murray until, like, I don't know, 10 years from now. I feel like we should be past that stage. Unless there's foul trouble or injuries, that guy should be good for 15 tonight. Set your watch by it.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. Too often you're right. I don't know the number of single-digit scoring games he's had this year.
Four.
But
he's had four.
Ooh, someone was ready. Someone did their research. But – you're right. Sometimes he just doesn't he should be able to at least get inside the lane and get to the foul line. Like, those should be non-negotiable points that he should come up with. I get it if your 3-point shot isn't falling, but get to the line, like draw contact. Like, that's his bread and butter. And you're right. You know, maybe four is four too many for a guy who has his capabilities and his heights. At least this last week, the dude has found his rhythm.
I think we're contractually bound to our Argentinian contingent to at least chat about Facu Campazzo for 5 to 10 minutes every podcast. And since he's now been thrust into a much bigger role here in the last couple weeks, and it's coincided with Jamal Murray playing some of his best basketball, I was wondering your opinion on what you think, how you think he's played, and has it been a positive, negative, or negligible impact having Facu in the lineup?
Facu's been great. Like, the past 2 weeks, with all the injuries, when all the injuries hit, he was basically thrown into a real reserve role. I think 25 minutes a night, at least for the past four or five games. And like the defense is always there. He is annoying. He is a pest. He is creating deflections and putting pressure on guys when it is just irritating. I don't know. Whenever you played pickup basketball, was there ever a guy who just picked you up full court and you're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, this is pickup runs. Like, that's Faku, but in the NBA. And, you know, he's fought his whole life to get to the NBA. He's 29 years old. I was thinking of Dennis Quaid, the rookie, the other day. And that's Faku. Like, he's a hybrid of Dennis Quaid and Rudy combined. Like, and I don't even think that's hyperbole. Like, that's kind of how I look at him. He's gone on this like circuitous route to the NBA, Olympics, Real Madrid, for years, just trying to prove his chops. And he's finally gotten here. And the dude is diving on the floor, like leaving, I said on Twitter, leaving dents on the opposing opponent's floors in Boston, in Washington, in Cleveland. Like, the dude just plays hard. And like, for a team that's kind of searching for its motor, its consistent motor, he's kind of an antidote. He's kind of just like a breath of fresh air. Like, all right, you know what you're going to get in Faku. And like, lately he's been scoring. I think he's averaged about 15, 16 points in the last four games. And I noted the other day, I think he had four or five straight games with at least two steals. Like, his steal rate is among the best in the NBA when you kind of cater it to the per 36. It is among the best in the NBA. So I really do appreciate kind of the injection of life that he has given the Nuggets. However, I do caution that he might, because he checks so many hustle and like gritty and like blue collar boxes. I mean, that is Michael Malone's prototypical player. So I do wonder whether Malone ever leans a little bit too heavily into Campazzo because of who he is and what he represents and the style and the energy that he brings, as opposed to thinking like big picture, like maybe we should go big given that our, you know, two power forwards are injured. Maybe we should inject a little bit more shooting than Campazzo generally offers. But, you know, that's not Faku's problem. Faku, in my opinion, has been, like I said, a breath of fresh air. He's a joy to watch. Some of the passes that he throws are just fantastic. And you can't help but think that that adding an IQ, a basketball IQ that he has to the Nuggets only makes Nikola Jokic happy. Like, there's just no way that doesn't.
So I got two questions here on the Faku train. I think I generally agree with a lot of what you said. He brings energy to a team that sometimes lacks energy, and that's great. That being said, I got a couple of bones to pick here in Faku land.
Let's go.
One of them.
Is Faku land next to Max Contractville?
No, I'm just curious. That's like a two-hour drive.
Got it. There's a gap. It's the other side of town.
No, it's pastoral. Like, you go through some pastoral land, you know, farms and stuff.
Farmland? Okay. I'm there.
Okay. So here we are in Faku land. One, is he perhaps a little too aggressive sometimes on defense? Could maybe he tone it down just a bit because he puts himself in bad situations or puts his teammates in bad situations because of his over-aggression? Is that something that you have seen, or am I just projecting?
Yeah. So what I kind of think about Faku is like, bigger NBA players implicitly have an advantage just because they're bigger. And so what Faku does is he implicitly plays harder and more aggressive to try to give himself an advantage. He likes to put the referees in strange positions where he puts himself and then he gets bashed. He'll get knocked and it almost compels the referees to blow the whistle. And so I think he generally tends to put the onus on the referees, which I think is a smart move when you don't have a lot of physical advantages. I think he makes up for it in the motor category. And so that's why I think he plays over aggressive. Like, here's one component where he fits in well with the NBA. I'm not sure I've ever seen him agree with a foul call. I think he argues almost every foul call. And And let me tell you, it looks sympathetic when it's coming from a 5'10" guy and his hands are up and he's like, come on, what was I doing? I was just playing hard. Like, that's his generic argument. So I can't fault him for the overaggression. Dude got 6 fouls. And if he's not playing, I mean, you know, he has 6 fouls and he wants to use them all. So I'm going to throw that bone back in your face.
So part of that, the other concern on that hustle thing is you brought up the size. He really struggles on the boards. I mean, there are times where other teams get extra possessions simply because he's just not big enough to deal with the bodies that are down by the basket.
Yeah. So they need to be Malone needs to be cognizant of who he pairs him with. He needs to be with rebounders. He needs to be like RJ Hampton is a really good rebounder for a guard. Obviously, Jokic is a really good rebounder. Michael Porter Jr. is a really good rebounder. I'm not convinced that Zeke Nagy is there yet as a rebounder. And then Will Barton and Gary Harris and whoever else is playing there too, like meh, like negligible rebounders. And so you do need to be cognizant. He's small. It is tough to play him alongside of Monte Morris because you'll get beat on the glass from a guard position. But like, again, kind of bleeding these two topics together, I've seen him go and get, like, it hasn't happened often, but I've seen him go and get boards amongst trees that he had no business getting rebounds because he just, like, you know, wiggles his way in there and charges and surprises people. So I think Malone is willing to concede the rebounds as long as he brings it defensively and brings that irritant demeanor. So, you know, like, clearly Malone likes him. Clearly he has found favor in this guy who brings it every single night and is willing to give up his body. Like, and you do wonder the trickle down effect on the rest of the guys, if they will ever play defense as hard as Facu Campazzo does.
Okay, one last Facu bone to pick here, and it's the shooting. I think that there are times where teams are essentially encouraging open looks for Facu. They are saying, we can't guard all of the guys in this five, so we're going to give you Facu with a three-pointer from the wing and sort of roll the dice on that. And I think that happened last night a little bit. Towards the end of the game, he knocked down a couple at like the very last 2 minutes, but he missed a couple others prior to that. For a team that lacks, I would say, a lot of shooters, they have some shooters, but they don't have a ton. Can they afford to have him on the floor with those guys in crunch time?
I think so, because until Facu stops shooting because he's thinking about it from three, I'm cool with him being out there. I like it when he's confident. There was a game earlier this year. I think it was probably a few weeks ago. He airballed a three, missed bad. It was at home and it was like, oh, all right. Maybe don't take those wide open shots. Comes down, one or two possessions later, drains it, buries the three. And as long as he is still willing to do that, I think that was the game where Malone, I think you referred to it as big cojones. And as long as he's willing to keep shooting, like, I don't have a problem with it. I care a lot about guys' confidence. And, like, and you know, Facu's been in a number of big games, played in high-level leagues, and is not scared to shoot. If you're going to compete and get out there with trees who are 7 feet tall and you're, you know, more than a foot shorter than them, you better have the confidence. So as long as he's, like, confident and keeps firing – I'm cool with them shooting. I don't want them shooting 6 a game, but like when it's open and the offense gives it to you and Jokic finds you in the corner for 3, launch. Like, and if it hits 30, 32% of the time, 35% of the time, cool. Then that's a win. Like, you got to keep the defense honest, in my opinion.
All right. So moving on from Mr. Campazzo, trade deadline. Still several weeks away. We're not quite there yet. I think that's going to be in March, if I remember correctly.
March 25th.
And we are roughly a month away. So few things I wanted to talk about here. First, if you were making – you were pulling the trigger. You're making the decisions here in the Nuggets front office. what hole, what piece, what ability or body do you think that the Nuggets need to add to their rotation to turn themselves into a true contender?
All right, I'm going to give you – we should do like a pipe dream, a realistic, and then a meh move. But okay. That's a lot to think of on the spot. I don't want to put myself in that because I mostly just want to do the pipe dream to tell you who I think – would be maybe the most ideal fit on the Nuggets throughout the whole league.
Okay. All right. Throw it at me.
To me, the guy, and I don't even think he's available because he just signed an extension. But if you were to pick a guy who the Nuggets desperately needed, I would look to Toronto and I would look at OG Anunoby, a guy who the Nuggets wanted to draft in 2017 and ultimately botched and traded down and did not get him. He would be ideal. He would be beyond ideal. A 3-4 who can guard, is physical, can guard the wings in the West. Like, that's my pipe dream. It's not happening. I'm not positing anything. That is just, I'm trying to set a parameter here. And so then what happens is Tim Connelly needs to ask himself, is there a move out there that demonstrably changes our prospects this year? And I don't know if the answer is yes. I don't think Bradley Beal is available. From all indications, Bradley Beal wants to stay in Washington. So then you ask yourself, do we need to change something up for the sake of changing things up? Is that good enough? Is that does that warrant it? Will a little bit of new blood help us here? That's a question he needs to ask himself too, because I think that you could make the argument that some of the players on the Nuggets have gotten stale. You know, Gary Harris is hurt again. And you know, I'm not sure what the market is for him at this point. Will Barton, who knows, you know, where he's at 1 year removed from his pretty significant knee injury. I think that the Nuggets would listen on just about everybody on the team, outside of their two, you know, cornerstones in Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. That is my read on it. So I'm going to give you a name. Wait.
Hold on.
Oh boy.
So you're saying that they would actually consider trading MPJ if the right offer came along?
I think so. I think that they would consider Michael Porter Jr. in a deal. However, I don't think that deal exists right now. Quite frankly, I also think that it would be premature of Tim Connelly to trade Michael Porter Jr. In his third year. However, he has yet to play a full 82 regular season games. And that's we're about to get sidetracked. But that's where this conundrum comes from, is you don't know what you have in Michael Porter because he has, I think he's played like 76 or 77 regular season games and yet is in his third NBA year, which means this coming off season, he'll be rookie extension eligible. And it will be very hard to reach a conclusive number from both sides that appeases both sides, given that we don't know enough. No one knows enough. Like, you know, he could actually double his NBA experience from now until next year. In which case we'd have a whole lot more information about his value, his potential, how he holds up with his injury history, all of those things. So to me, I think it would be very premature at this point to trade Michael Porter Jr. And again, the timeline is get to next year, assess where you're at the trade deadline. And if you feel that you will pay whatever, then you play it out. You take it to restricted free agency. But my concern, if I'm Tim, is that some team is going to throw him a max contract offer, and then the Nuggets are going to have to swallow hard to figure out which direction they want to go. Are they comfortable paying Porter max money, or are they not? And do they need to make a decision earlier on that if the answer is no? And so that's where my stance on Michael Porter is. I think that if the right trade came along, I think that Tim would do it. However, I don't think that trade's available. And frankly, I would be stunned if they traded Porter this upcoming deadline. But all right, you sidetracked me.
Sorry.
This was on you.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I just heard something that I had to peck at. I had
that's
to
get fine. All right. So here's the other name that I want to throw out. It's completely hypothetical. However, a bit of logical reporting behind it. I believe that there, I've had probably four or five different people tell me that the teams who are believed to be sellers going into this upcoming trade deadline are Houston, which we've talked about on this podcast before, Oklahoma City, Cleveland, and Orlando. And so those four teams, to me, you ask what body, what piece, what position? I'm looking at the wing. You're good at point guard. You're good at center. You're theoretically good at the four. So talk to me about twos and threes. I'm looking up and down those rosters at guys that might be available. And the name that, again, hypothetically I settled on for an immediate improvement is Terrence Ross from the Orlando Magic. And the reason why I like Terrence Ross is because he can get you 15, 20, 25 a night. I know he's averaging about 15 or 16, decent defender, and he's a little bit more consistent than Will Barton has been. And so the trade that I like, I looked it up. They are basically, those two wings are basically on the exact same contract. The reason why the Magic would conceivably entertain this offer is that Will Barton has a player option for this year. So he can be a free agent after this season. And so the Magic could get off 2 years worth of money because Terrence Ross has, I think he's a free agent in 2023. So that's kind of that. I mean, straight up, that's kind of the iteration that I would suggest. However, then Tim asks yourself, does that move the needle? Does that do anything for us, our prospects this year? And the answer is probably not. But if you does it improve our ceiling? Probably not. But if you want new blood, if you want a guy who can shoot, a guy who maybe doesn't need the ball in his hands as much, Terrence Ross is a guy I would look at if I was considering wings and improving the roster in the immediate.
Okay, so you had a dream scenario for somebody to trade for. And given the teams that you just listed off, I got one for you too. Are you ready for it?
I'm sitting down.
Okay, good. Lu Dort. Is there any way that could ever happen? I just love Lu Dort. And if you put him on the Nuggets, great defender. He's good enough of a shooter now that you actually have to honor his three-point shot, and he plays his butt off.
I love Lu Dort. And I'm very confident in saying a lot of the league loves Lu Dort. That's a tongue twister. he's also on maybe the best contract in the entire NBA.
Yes, he is.
Without looking at it, without having it at the top of my head, I believe he making like $1.5 million for each of the next 3 or 4 years. Like, it is beyond ridiculous how valuable he is. So to me, the question is, does Sam Presti, is he looking to trade Lu Dort? Does he need, like, I've heard Oklahoma City doesn't have a lot of first round picks. Maybe they need another first round pick for Lu Dort. That honestly, it probably takes a prospect of the Nuggets. So probably either Zeke Nagy or RJ Hampton and a first round pick to get Lu Dort. And obviously the Nuggets first round picks, assuming they make the playoffs, aren't going to be that great. So it would take a lot. And you have to consider the idea that it's a Western Conference team. It's in your division. Could Sam Presti stomach seeing a guy blossom against an ostensible rival? All of those things come into play. He would be perfect for them. I also don't know what justification or what incentive do the Thunder have to move him? Like, he's a young guy, building block guy who you can build around with him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in Oklahoma City. So I'm not sure that they, would listen. I know that there is interest all over the place. I don't know if it's from the Nuggets, but I know that there is a lot of interest.
Yeah. If I was Presti, there's no way in heck I'm trading him. I would not give him, given the contract that he's on. And as you mentioned, you can only have so many first round picks. At some point, you have too many.
Oh, yeah, I was being facetious. I was definitely being facetious.
I think when you have, like, you know, 15 over the next 5 years, at that point, you're getting to a place where it's diminishing returns. All right, we've talked about some potential targets. Who could they entice teams with? I mean, outside of Michael Porter Jr., it's really hard to picture. Is Bull Bull, for example, somebody that other teams would be interested in? Is RJ Hampton somebody that would make another team think for a second? You know, what are the trade chips that the Nuggets have that, one, they'd be willing to part with, and two, other teams would actually be interested in taking?
I mean, I think Hampton is very valuable around the league. And I think that one of the silver linings of all these injuries is that Malone and the Nuggets have been able to showcase these guys in Najee, in Hampton. I do think that there was interest in Marcus Howard before, like, from a bunch of teams, in trying to get him after the draft, after he went undrafted. I don't know that he would command anything at this point, Marcus Howard, but Bol Bol, I think I would guess that the temperature is very, very lukewarm on Bol Bol interest. That would be my guess. I mean, we've talked about it. It's Hampton, Najee, Porter, and then your firsts. And just to clarify, the Nuggets can trade their 2021 first round pick. They cannot trade their 23 through 25 first round pick because of protections. And so the next first round pick that they can deal after 2021 is 2027, which you have to be on some kind of drugs to trade your 2027 pick in the year 2021, when you have no idea what country Nikola Jokic will be in, let alone what team Nikola Jokic will be in. So, those are their assets. And, you know, you can talk about a guy like PJ Tucker on the Houston Rockets. You can talk about a guy like Daniel House, or who I know I've mentioned, Victor Oladipo, David Nwaba. Like, the Houston Rockets have a ton of wings who the Nuggets could conceivably get involved with. But do any of those really do it for you? Like, I'm just, you know, if I'm Tim and I'm Calvin Booth, I'm asking myself, do those make any market change? Is that the difference between me getting to the second round and me getting to the conference finals? Like, and to me, there's no obvious guy. I know people have talked about Aaron Gordon, and I strongly believe Aaron Gordon wants out of Orlando. But I don't think Aaron Gordon does it for the Nuggets either. To me, Aaron Gordon is one of those guys who's really intriguing, potential wise, but hasn't really materialized. He hasn't done it yet. And so I don't know how well he fits. Like, again, it boils down to who's available. You know, GM me likes Terrence Ross, but I don't think that is that exciting of an addition.
The Nuggets are currently outside of the top six, which, NBA fans know that means that they'd be in play-in game territory if the season were to end today. So that being said, what's your concern level right now with the Nuggets? Are we looking at a team that's going to take a step back this season after going to the Western Conference Finals?
I mean, there's a big gap between taking a step back and playing in the play-in game. So I guess that's what you're asking me, is to parse. If you take Jamal Murray's word for it, amid his rant, he goes, "You guys know we can beat the teams we need to beat. You guys know we'll be in the playoffs."
I was struck by that comment, by the way, because it's, I don't feel like I know that at all. I know last year's team could. I don't know about this year's team.
Yeah, I mean, it, like, there are so many variables. Like, if Jokic were to miss a week or two, the Nuggets could very well be on the wrong side of the play-in game. They could very well, you know, drop to that 8-9, 9-10 range. The fact that the Nuggets are not giving themselves a buffer is alarming. I expect them to eventually figure it out. I think the injuries are a big part that I mentioned earlier, but we, you know, it's a reality when you're without so many veteran guys who can defend, who know what they're doing on defense. You know, that hurts in the aggregate. That hurts a ton. So Paul Millsap, they need him back. Gary, who knows? Malone was not too encouraging yesterday when I asked him about Gary Harris's imminent prospects for returning. And then PJ Dozier's been out for a couple weeks now with that hamstring. So my concern is I'm probably 6.5, 7 chili peppers.
And, it's rising. The chili pepper level is rising.
Yeah, I just like 30 games in, like, you know, what have we learned about the team? I think they're 17th overall in defense. You know, we haven't really seen the step from Michael Porter yet. Some of it owing to his COVID earlier in the year. Some of it owing to other factors. Like, there's just I just don't know what kind of tangible conclusions we can make at this point. And that's concerning. Like, other than that, Nikola Jokic is, you know, unbelievably gifted and a freak, and the Nuggets got so lucky with him. I don't know what other conclusion I can draw this year other than that there's been a regression, which probably should have been expected given that they lost 3 important pieces last year and exchanged them for a bunch of rookies. So that's kind of my concern level. Can all these guys grow up in the second half? Can we expedite, kind of what we see from them? I don't know that you can fast forward that. Like, NBA development is very real, and playing in an NBA environment is tough to, you can't sidestep it. Like, there are growing pains, and what we're seeing are growing pains.
Yeah, it's, I think the thing that concerns me the most is they are getting an MVP worthy season from Nikola Jokic, and they are struggling to win on a game to game basis. Despite, I mean, now granted, Nikola was not great last night. That's probably one of the first times this season that he's had a C plus B minus game. And everything else, it's been superb, fantastic, amazing, almost every night out from him. And yet they're not in the top 6 in the Western Conference. And we are at a place where we don't quite know what we're getting on a night-to-night basis from the team in the aggregate. To me, that's extremely concerning.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And, you know, the schedule is unrelenting. I think they have 6 more games before the All-Star break, 2 at home and then 4 on the road every other day, or it's 3 and 4. And let me tell you, I'm not doing the traveling per se, but I feel it in terms of the amount of coverage that this schedule is mandating. So, yeah, I mean, they have a lot to prove at this point. I don't think that anybody would even lightly pencil them into the Western Conference Finals at this point. Like, maybe not even with the crayon. Maybe crayon's a bad example, but – invisible ink. I don't think they would use invisible ink. Maybe whiteout. all right, I'm done here. This is I deteriorated.
Well, we went through a lot of mediums there, though. That was good. So I think we've pretty much hit everything here, Mike, that we wanted to talk about. We've got who's coming up next here? Who's on the docket for the
night? Portland.
Portland. Dame.
Oh, do they have any history?
Yeah, a little bit. Little bit. Damian Lillard, by the way. Oh, man. And by the way, he didn't make starter, all-star starter. So they're getting angry. I want to prove how great I am, Lillard, for their next game. That should be fun.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I did vote for Damian Lillard as a starter. So don't take it up with the media, Dame. it was actually the fans who voted Luka in over you. But yeah, Dame – I mean, he's like, as a fan of basketball, he's one of my favorite players to watch. He is just unbelievable. And the Nuggets have their work cut out for them, especially because Damian Lillard's primary guard is almost always Gary Harris. And they don't have Gary Harris. They they have maybe Faku or maybe Jamal or maybe Monte or maybe RJ Hampton. And that's a scary matchup if you're the Nuggets. So look, they need to write this. They need to get some momentum going into the break. Certainly want to win at home, even though home court advantage is just wonky this year. Obviously didn't do well on this recent road trip. Again, a lot of questions to answer before the All-Star break. And I think they have a lot to prove to themselves more so than to me or anyone else Jamal wants to joust with.
All right, Mike. Well, thanks for joining us again. Well, hopefully we'll be back again here in another week or two to talk about, well, whatever's new with the Nuggets and whatever's going on. So we'll chat at you again then.
All right. Thanks a lot.